Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sean McDermott joins me on the Wester Hotline right now here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Bills Patriots Sunday night football inside Highmark Stadium. It's going to be a great crowd, rivalry uniform night for the Buffalo Bills. Should be great weather. Good morning, Coach. Welcome back into the show.
Good morning. Great to be on with you guys this weekend. Another great weekend of weather in the Western New York area.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Pat Hammer just said, Coach, we're going to have near 80, I think, over the next few days. We're enjoying this right now. Get out and play some golf when you have some time, by the way, which I know is probably not very often this time of year.
Not very often is accurate. Not very often or never this time of year, but hey, that's what we sign up for.
Yep.
But it is beautiful and very enjoyable, to say the least.
Before I get into this week, Coach, let's just look back to last week and congratulate you. 90 wins in your career as the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I know you don't go into a game or a season thinking about the numbers, the records, but when you step back and think about what it takes to kind of win in this league and how tough it is to be around long enough to do something like that, what does it mean to you personally?
Oh, it's very humbling. It really is. I mean, what a blessing it's been to be here with my family, raising our kids in our community. You know, hopefully we've added a lot to this community, and in the midst of all that, we've grown a lot since being here and have gained a lot as a family from this community. And I mean, I think it's a great just community to be in and raise kids in, and you know, a close-knit type of place, which we really love and appreciate. And the football part of it has been enjoyable, right? To be able to do what we've done. It's never about one person. I've had a great team around me, players, staff, Brandon and his staff. So couldn't have done it without everyone's help. But much more to go, and we're looking forward to the journey.
And of course, being a part of this community, football runs deep here in Buffalo, as it does around the country. This is Rivalry Weekend here in Western New York with the rivalry jerseys, and of course, highlighting some games on the local high school schedule. You've played football your whole life, basically, Coach. What do you remember about rivalry games in high school and in college?
Well, I think it's kind of human nature, isn't it, for everyone to get a little bit more amped up for
yeah.
those games, maybe have a little bit more on the line in terms of, you know, the you know, that kind of that grit, that fire that lights in your stomach and the core of your guts as you head into the game. And so we're looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be a great atmosphere, and it's certainly a high level opponent that's playing well right now. And it's going to be a tough one for us.
When I think about these rivalry games, Coach, you and I are right around the same age. I think about All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise and the bus pulling in Pennsylvania and the rain and the big neck rolls. Right, we've come a long way since then, but it's kind of that feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, well, speak for yourself, Sal. I didn't grow up in that era.
I love it. All right, Coach. Well, you do have a game, obviously, Sunday night against the New England Patriots. It is the Nike rivalry uniform night for the Buffalo Bills. Should be a fun crowd, great weather. But, of course, you are dealing with some injuries on the injury report. Let's get to that right now. And if you have anybody you want to tell us about that is going to be out for this game, and then I might ask you about a couple specific players and what's going on. So with that, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, sure. So Dorian Strong and Dorian Williams will not practice today. They'll both be out. TJ Sanders will not practice today. We'll take it one day at a time with him as we head down the stretch here. And the same, well, not the same, but, you know, you look at Spencer Brown, Matt Milano, Ed Oliver, they'll all practice in some fashion today, and we'll see how they do.
Okay, I'm curious about Dorian Strong, Coach. Any concern there? He had a neck injury. He showed up on the injury report. Now he's not going to play. What's his prognosis?
Yeah, no, it's just something that's just popped up here, and it's things that we're looking into, so we'll have to see as we move forward here.
Okay, and then, of course, Ed Oliver, Matt Milano, you have missed them for a couple of weeks. How do you think that they've kind of responded and progressed throughout the week here?
Yeah, I think they've done some good things, you know, each of them. Again, just taking it one day at a time. It certainly would be great to have them back. We'll see how it goes.
All right, Sean McDermott here on the Western Hotline. Of course, that is the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Coach, you had a running back, James Cook, named AFC Offensive Player of the Month. Quite the honor. Just looking back, really, you guys have not had an Offensive Player of the Month other than Josh Allen since 2011. For a guy to play that position and win that honor says a lot about what he's done for your team so far. What have you seen from James through the first 4 weeks and really building on what he did last year?
Yeah, like you said, he's built on what he did last year. It's fun to watch him run. It really is. Yeah. I mean, he's just so nifty, so smooth at times. And then he does bring some power to the equation and some physicality to his game. And I can't say enough about the way he's grown and who he is as a player. And just extremely proud of him to this point. It's important to keep everything in moderation with his rep counts as well, mm-hmm. and trying to keep him as healthy as we can.
You have an opponent coming in here, the New England Patriots, who have a really, really athletic and talented young quarterback in Drake May. I believe he leads the league in completion percentage with guys who qualify. What do you see from Drake May so far through four games?
Yeah, a very impressive young player. Can do everything that the quarterback position calls for. He can throw it. He can run it. He scrambles with it. You know, it's clear that they, I would imagine they feel, you know, I'm excited about the future for him and then for their organization because of his ability.
And, of course, Stephon Diggs, a storyline coming back to Buffalo for the first time to play against your team. Here in Buffalo for 4 years, just a fantastic player, obviously, part of a lot of winning here in Buffalo. What did he mean for your organization at the time he came and the player he was for you in those 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, very productive player when he was here. The combination of Josh and Steph was, you know, high level. And, you know, when you bring in a player like that, you know, they really bring, they really raise the standard. And if that makes sense in terms of the level of that you compete at practice and the level that you play at on game day.
And then finally, Coach Mac Hollins as well. He comes back a year, quite the personality, obviously. Mac Hollins, what did you learn about him and, going against him this time around and what he brings to the table for their offense?
Yeah, one of my favorites. He really is. I mean, and same with Steph. It's mm-hmm. It's hard to see players who have played with you and you go through things and they move on. It's not an easy part of the business, but it is the business. And happy for Mac and his family. And he's a really, really good football player. And the thing about Mac is, you know, he's a two-dimensional player. Not only run and pass, but also the special teams component that he brings to the table. So. He has incredible habits every day. You know, he wants to be the best and he works at it. And whenever we would, hey, we got to slow down this day because guys are tired or what have you, he would get upset. And I love that about him because he always wants to go full speed and that's how he plays the game. So tremendous amount of respect for him.
Great insight. I love that answer. And Coach, you did bring up special teams. I want to ask you about defending their special teams and what you have to do this weekend because they now have the reigning special teams player of the week and have had another one as well in Antonio Gibson. This is a Patriots team that wants to win in the margins on special teams. How buttoned up do you need to be in that area this weekend?
Well, they're explosive on special teams. They've done a great job building the roster to, you know, account for the how special teams, in yep. particular the kickoff return and kickoff play, have changed. So, you know, they've got explosive players. They've got 3 to 4 touchdowns if you include the preseason games as well. And so, you know, we got to make sure that we're on our details and that we swarm and tackle well because that can swing the game if we let it.
All right, Coach, enjoy the weather this weekend. Of course, Sunday during the day and then Sunday night football. Bills Mafia is going to be definitely showing up to see these uniforms and cheer on and scream on the Buffalo Bills.
We look forward to it. Look forward to that 12th man. They're phenomenal. And enjoy the weekend. We'll see everyone Sunday night.
All right, you got it. That is Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott on the West Her Hotline. No Dorian Strong, no Dorian Williams. Dorian Strong, neck injury. We'll see where it goes. They're looking at some things. Don't love hearing that. For Dorian Strong, the young corner, the young sixth-round corner.
No, especially not a neck injury. Those
no. You know. So something to monitor there. The two Dorians will be out for the Bills. Dorian Strong, Dorian Williams, and then T.J. Sanders will practice today. They'll see where it goes with him. They are dealing with some injuries here, and we'll see. Good news is Matt Milano, Ed Oliver, Spencer Brown, looks like they're going to practice again. And, I mean, they'll see where it goes after today as well.
I do like the look of Milano practicing and tackling dummies, though. Like, even with the pec injury, that's normally a pretty good sign, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, him
taking
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, taking the bag to the ground. I agree 100%. Just reading around the league here. Vikings have ruled out J.J. McCarthy for Sunday's game. So Carson Wentz is going to play again. Not that that's a huge surprise. And their line is going to be without three starters. Center Ryan Kelly, right tackle Brian O'Neill, and left guard Donovan Jackson.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a good...
As well as backup center Michael Juergens. He'll be out.
So the backup's out as well?
Yes. So that means you're going to the third string center? Maybe you have to move somebody over?
Not great for the Carson Wentz back there.
No, we also had Adam Schefter reporting. I did not realize Braylon Allen had a significant injury of some sort. But apparently, he is out 8 to 12 weeks, according to Aaron Glenn.
Wow.
I mean, that's the season.
Do we know what the injury is? I couldn't find it.
Let me see. Yeah, let me see.
8 to 12 weeks. I mean, that's Burrow's injury timeline, right? It's like 3 months almost.
Let me see. Braylon Allen. Let me see if I can. You couldn't find it. I'm going to see if I can find it. He could rehab it to have surgery. Where does it here? It just says his injury. I can't tell what the injury. Oh,
MCL
suffered an
sprain?
MCL sprain.
Yeah, MCL sprain.
Jets come to the Bills the final game of the year. I mean, at that point, if the Jets are out of it, Braylon Allen is not playing, right? I mean, it's 8 to 12. You're not putting the guy on the field, probably.
It's the same argument as Joe Burrow.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yeah, some injuries around the league to note. Speaking of around the league, let's take a look at this weekend's schedule, shall we? The week started last night. We told you about that. That was an overtime win, upset for the Niners, beating the Rams 26-23. The week starts on Sunday, though, with a London game. How about that? The Vikings are taking on the Cleveland Browns in London.
Second week in a row they're in London.
Dublin.
Dublin, right.
There you go.
They're overseas, that's
right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So, Vikings, Browns in London. Dublin is where they played last week. This week, they'll play in London. They stay there 1 week to the next. Vikings looking to go 3-2, but the Browns looking to go 2-3 after the after they have that win a couple weeks ago against the Packers, but then lost 34-10 to the Lions last week. I'm looking at the Browns box scores here. 16, 17, 13, and 10. That's all they've scored. They're making a change, by the way. Dylan Gabriel's the quarterback. Texans-Ravens. What do you think about this game with everything going on? Do we have an official word on Lamar Jackson yet, by the way?
I don't think so. John Harbaugh is being very, very vague. He wouldn't even mention if he was day-to-day.
It sounds to me like he's not playing.
It sounds like it. I think they're trying to just keep people on their toes, but it sounds like he wouldn't be.
Rap says Lamar Jackson's hamstring injury is more week-to-week than 2 to 3 weeks. He will try to play this week.
Oh,
that's according to what I'm reading here. I don't know. Okay. Well, I don't know what that does for them. And look, the Texans' defense is good. They're a good defense. They're going to get after them. I think the Texans win this game, especially if Lamar doesn't play. But this is going to be a test for sure. And the Texans' offense can't get off the mat right now, it feels like. Maybe they can at some point against a Ravens defense that has struggled. This Ravens defense is supposed to be so good. It's struggled this year. Dolphins at Panthers. Dolphins struggling in a lot of ways. So are the Panthers, though. They had that great game against the Falcons. Then they lay an egg last week against the Patriots. 42-13 they lose. Big game for both teams. They want to start keeping pace in their division. You know, yeah, you're not expecting the Dolphins to challenge the Bills. But right now, I mean, think about it. Look at the conference, the AFC. There's nobody running away. 2-2 is the 7 seed. 2-2 is the 9 seed. The Dolphins get to 2-3. They're right there, and they're playing a Carolina Panthers team they can beat, but it's out without Tyreek Hill, though. That's going to be tough for them. Same thing in this NFC, by the way. You look at the NFC, and you got teams at 2-2 right there in the 8 seed. You go to 2-3, you're right there again. You're Carolina. So you got to. It's a big game for both teams as far as where they want to take the rest of their season and the direction. Still a lot of football to be played. That's a 1 o'clock game in Carolina. Dolphins at Panthers. Raiders are at the Colts. I mean, the Colts, they go to L.A. and actually kind of outplay the Rams in a lot of ways last week.
Yeah, but they've looked pretty impressive with Indiana Jones there at the quarterback.
A.D. Mitchell, that play where he loses the ball.
That was bad.
I mean, that winds up really hurting them.
Mm-hmm. The Colts just have a habit of doing that. Jonathan Taylor did a similar thing last year.
And then the Raiders, they couldn't get out of their own way last week against the Bears late in the game, and the Bears wind up winning the game after they block a kick where the Raiders were trying to get the game-winning field goal. Patriots lost to this Raiders team, by the way, in week one, 20-13. So this is in Indy. It's a 1 o'clock start. And, you know, if you're a Bills fan, you want the Raiders to win this game. Anytime you can get the Colts, the Chargers, the Chiefs, all these teams that are up there a little bit, you want to keep pushing them back down. That would be a big loss for them and be pushed back down. Giants are at the Saints. Jackson Dart getting the start again. This is a Jackson Dart versus Spencer Rattler game. And Jackson Dart got the win last week. They did not put up any really solid numbers on offense, but he did enough. It's all you need sometimes. Just do enough. The Saints almost did enough to beat the Bills last week.
They were closer for comfort.
Yeah, interesting game. I think the Saints might win this game. As much as the Giants had all this energy, I think what the Saints showed last week, they showed me they can play a little bit, right?
Their defense sure did.
Yeah.
The safety that picked off Josh Allen was remarkable.
It's a great point, and they're going to try and get after the Giants, so we'll see. 1-3 against 0-4 in this game. It's a 1 o'clock start. Cowboys at the Jets. Just told you, Braylon Allen out for the Jets for probably the rest of the year, it looks like, at least. 8-12 weeks. Well, could be the rest of the year. 8-12 weeks. Cowboys record. 1-2-1. Wait, why do we got to say that? Why do we got to say 1-2-1? They tied. They tied.
I kind of respect the Rams for not going for the tie last night, so we wouldn't have to mention another and one at the end. But
Jets looking for their first win of the year. They could get it, but the Cowboys are just too much in the passing game. I think they'll probably throw the ball all over the Jets. Jets might throw the ball all over on the Cowboys. I don't know. I got to look at the over-under. This could be a passing game back and forth. This is a big matchup. I know I have Garrett Wilson on one of my fantasy teams, and people are talking about, oh yeah, Garrett Wilson should eat this week, right, against the Cowboys. But maybe the Cowboys can eat in the passing game against the Jets, too. We'll see. All right, 0-4 Jets host the 1-2-1 Cowboys at 1 o'clock. Also at 1 o'clock, the Super Bowl champion Eagles, who won by not completing a pass in the second half last week, by the way, take on, that's right, that's happened. They take on the Denver Broncos, who looked great on Monday night against the Bengals. Joe Burrowless Bengals, 28-3. Good test here for the Broncos. I'm very interested in this game. I want to see how the Broncos look in this test against the Eagles. And the Eagles, here they go. Eagles and Bills, right? The only two 4-0 teams in the entire NFL right now. Titans are at the Cardinals, who have a lot of injuries right now. I mean, I think the Cardinals are down to their fourth and fifth running backs at this point, it feels like.
At least third
and fourth. Titans still haven't won a game. Cam Ward at quarterback. This is a 4:05 p.m. start in Arizona, by the way. They're still looking for their first win. They haven't had it yet. This is a good game. Buccaneers at Seahawks. This is a 4:05 start. Interested to see what these two teams can do. Bucs are dealing with injuries. Mike Evans now out. Chris Godwin is back, though. They do have offensive line injuries. And the Seahawks, there's a lot of good stuff out there about the Seahawks, their defense especially. Mike McDonald, what he's doing with that defense. They've allowed 20 or less points in every game they've played. That's saying something. So this is an interesting game. Bucs at Seahawks. Bucs come here in November. Let's see what they have at the Seahawks on Sunday. Lions at the Bengals. I got to be honest. The Bengals are my loser pick pool here. My loser pick for the week. Yeah, I mean, can you really expect them to hang with the Lions at this point? They cannot move the ball.
No, it's crazy. The backup quarterbacks who really played well 2 years ago, Joe Flacco, Jake Browning, this season have not been able to replicate the same thing.
No.
Browning, I know a lot of Jamar Chase fantasy owners who were optimistic with Jake Browning because they'll still get some catches and points. You're right. They can't move the ball whatsoever, so...
You know that the Bengals are still in a playoff seed. They're at number 6 over the Chiefs right now because they started with 2 wins.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're second in their division, 2-2. The Lions, you know, hey, I was wrong. I thought I was right after week one when I said, yeah, you lose those coordinators, like they're not going to be as good or explosive. Holy cow. Last 3 weeks, 52, 38, 34 points.
Yeah, they figured it out.
They have, and they look really good. Do you know what the Lions have next week? Do you know the schedule next week at all? I don't know how far you look. I only noticed this because I was just looking at some things with like the Bills going to Atlanta Monday night. The Sunday night game next week, Lions at Chiefs.
Oh, that's a good one.
And what's cool is I'll be in Atlanta watching that game at night because we'll fly in and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sit back and watch this game. But that's Sunday night, Lions at Chiefs. But they got to get through the Bengals first, and the Bengals, they can't get through anybody right now with how they're playing. So They are my loser pick. Because now when I said it publicly, I'm probably going to lose that game and the Bengals will win. Commanders are at the Chargers. Looks like Jaden Daniels will be back on the field for the Commanders. But for the Chargers, they are very banged up in the offensive line. And this is going to be a struggle for them without their two top tackles. Obviously, Slater's out for the year. Alt's now out. I think Joe Alt is out this week. He's a sprain, high ankle sprain.
So yeah.
I think he's out. I don't think he's playing. I haven't seen anything on that. Commanders haven't done as much as people maybe expected or thought, but they have missed Jaden Daniels for 2 weeks. This will be a big game if the Commanders can beat the Chargers here in the AFC, because as I said earlier, you kind of want as many losses as you can for these other AFC teams that are competing with the Buffalo Bills. That is a 4:25 p.m. start, Commanders at Chargers. And then Monday night, it's Chiefs-Jags. We'll talk about that more on Monday. Chiefs have a Monday night game on the road, then a Sunday night game at home next week against the Lions. In the meantime, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Northtown Automotive Buffalo Football Friday Extra Point Show here on WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Welcome back into One Bills Live. Maddie Glad alongside Chris Trapasso. We had our Snapdragon Apple snack, and now we're going to dive back into some football. We're now joined by NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell, also the co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show. Greg, thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Greg Cosell's weekly appearance on One Bills Live is presented by Pepsi. Pepsi is the official soft drink of the Buffalo Bills. Food deserves Pepsi. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Doing good. We're so happy to have you here. As you can see, we are at our local grocery store, Wegmans, where we are huddling for hunger this week. So Wegmans is doing a bunch of cool things throughout the week to help support the Bills and hunger-fighting charities. But we have you on to talk a little Buffalo Bills football. And Greg, I need to dive right in with James Cook earning AFC Offensive Player of the Month. 5 rushing touchdowns out of him in 4 weeks of play, second in the NFL with 401 rushing yards. What is working so well for James Cook this season?
You know, it's funny. When I did him coming out of Georgia, I really liked the player, but I have to admit, I did not think he could be what I guess would be called a feature back in the NFL. I thought that he'd be more of, you know, the complimentary type back, that the back that maybe you would have 130 carries and would be really good in your pass game as a receiver, which he was at Georgia. But he's turned out to be a pretty tough physical inside runner, which I'll be the first to admit, I didn't think that would be the case. To me, he's kind of a natural cutback runner. And I think they play into that with a lot of their concepts and their run schemes. He just has a really good sense of patience and vision. He sees it really well. We know he can take it to the house. you know, the thing that's really crazy about the Bills, and, you know, obviously for years and years, all we've talked about is Josh Allen, and he's obviously a great player, but they're really a running football team. I mean, and Josh can be Josh when necessary, but this team is really built on running the football. When they want to stabilize their offense, they run the ball. Look what they did to start the second half this past week. It's 14-10 in a game that people thought was going to be 40-10, and it was close. And what'd they do? They came out in the second half, two Cook runs right away, I think 11 or 15 yards. I guess the third one only gained 1 or 2 yards, but that's the nature of the run game. And that's the way they play. That's the way they stabilize the offense. In a very odd way, what Josh Allen has become is a really efficient executor and ball distributor. That's kind of what he is now, but he's always capable of the special, but that's not what they sort of feed into as the foundation of their offense.
So, Greg, I'm going to segue off the last bit that you just mentioned there in that answer. What have you seen in the Bills' pass game that you think there's still room for this aerial attack to get better? Is it more using Keon Coleman in the back shoulder game? Is it more maybe Josh Palmer down right. The football field? Where, or maybe more Dalton Kincaid? What areas do you think, hey, I could see, whether it's this game against the Patriots or over the next month and a half,
sure. That
the Bills' pass game actually got better because they did what?
Well, you know, it's funny, Chris, you say that, because obviously they win games and they score a lot of points. So it's not as if they're lacking for moving the ball on offense and scoring points. I would have to believe, though, that when they do talk about what they'd like to see more of, and then it comes down to how you want to scheme it and what Joe Brady, you know, feels that he wants to call in games. But they don't really, amazingly enough, and obviously the quarterback can make any throw to any part of the field, but they don't really have a big-time intermediate passing game that shows up in games. You know, again, I'm not there at practice, I'm not there in the meetings, but they don't really play like that. And we know they can do it. You know, it's just that's, I guess it becomes a choice. Now, the other factor there is, too, is maybe there are times where maybe 3 or 4 years ago, Josh would force one, and now he doesn't. And now he'll take the check down or he'll take the shorter throw. And look, obviously, this team does not turn the ball over, and that's a big deal. I mean, in this league, if you don't turn the ball over, you have a chance.
Yeah, it is,
you know,
a really big deal.
And particularly if you do have to punt, the other team has, you know, 75, 80, 85, 90 yards to go to score, and that's hard to do. So I would imagine, though, they would like to see, Chris, some more, you know, big explosive plays in the pass game. Because the ones they get now, like the Kincaid touchdown, which I think was 28 yards, that was a schemed play, and it worked out perfectly. You know, obviously they got what they wanted, but it was a schemed play. It had the swing screen look to it, and obviously the defense jumped up, and Kincaid got behind Grandison, who's obviously not going to run with him anyway. But a lot of those kinds of plays become schemed. As opposed to, hey, Josh dropping back and kind of reading it and then throwing it at the intermediate levels.
Dipping back into the run game, we talk about the fact that there could be more in this passing game, but in terms of what you're seeing out of the run game right now, Greg, I spoke to Chris earlier in the week, and one thing that Chris Brown said was, you know, the Bills have expanded their playbook in terms of how Joe Brady is calling run plays. They're not just running the duo concept that they ran a lot last year. Greg, what are you liking about the way that Joe Brady is calling run plays in 2025?
Well, it's funny you say that, Manny, because here's what when I finished watching their tape from this week, because I take really detailed notes when I watch these games. What I typed was, Bill's run game is a fascinating study. It is multiple in its personnel packages and formations and its concepts, yet they repeat a lot of the same concepts from different personnel packages and formations. So there's a lot going on in their run game that, and I know Aaron Cromer is a major, major part of this, and he's been doing it for a long time, and I know Aaron, and, you know, he's obviously been in the league. At this point, I guess it's probably close to 25 years. So he's seen and done a lot of things. And, you know, I just feel like it's you know, the use of personnel now has become a really big deal for them. I mean, now they line up with three tight ends. They line up with two tight ends. They get Gilliam involved now, and he's technically a fullback now. So there's just a lot of different personnel packages, a lot of different formations, a lot of different looks. You know, for instance, this year we haven't seen a lot of that tackle trap as much as which we used to see in the past. It seemed like they ran that all the time. We haven't seen that much of it this year, you know, so it's in some ways ever expanding. But yet what does stand out is they do repeat a lot of the same concepts, which a lot of the good running teams do. They just get to them in different ways.
All right, I want to jump over to the Patriots, the Bills' opponent here in week five. I got to start with Drake May. I mean, you and I, we talked about it during the pre-draft process a few years ago. What have you seen? I mean, we both know, and everyone knows, he's uber-talented, the arm strength, the mobility. He's had statistically a pretty darn good start to his second season. Just give a, whether it's broad strokes or something really specific, what have your takeaways been from watching the first month of the season of Drake May's second year in the NFL?
Well, I think, Chris, the first thing you have to start with, which makes it very impressive through four games, is he had to learn a brand new offense, because the Josh McDaniels offense was nothing like what he did a year ago. So he had to start from scratch. So the fact that he looks very comfortable, that's not an X and O point, but he just looks like a comfortable player, is really, it says something impressive about the player. But the two areas, which are big litmus test areas for quarterbacks, he's been outstanding in. And one is third down, and the other is versus pressure. He's been outstanding versus both of those. And one of the things I've noticed with when he gets blitzed is he knows exactly where to go with the football. He is not getting stuck in the pocket. And very often, young quarterbacks, they get stuck in the pocket. You know, Drake May throws that 7-yard ball right behind the blitz. He sees it, and he knows where to go. And to me, that's a big deal, because I've just, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've just seen so many young quarterbacks, when pressure comes, they speed up, everything happens too fast, they lose the mentality of what they're seeing. That's not been the case with him at all. And third down, you know, everybody calls it the money down, that's the big down. And he's been very, very good on third down this year. And obviously he's got the movement ability that if he does feel like, hey, I don't have a throw, you know, the progression isn't playing out the way I was hoping versus that particular coverage, he can use his legs, and he's good at that. And the other thing, you know, he's not Josh Allen, and I don't make comparisons like that, but I got a chance to stand next to him and say hello to him at the combine when he came out, and he's a big, big man. I mean, you know, you don't realize that sometimes till you stand next to some of these quarterbacks, because we've now accepted in the league that quarterbacks can play well being shorter guys. You know, years and years ago, Maddie, probably way before your time, Maddie, you know, quarterbacks all had to be 6'4", six, you know, that was the way the game was. Now we've kind of accepted that, hey, you can be a really good quarterback in this league at 6 feet, 6'1", 6'2", you know, the Baker Mayfields, those kinds of players. But Drake May is a big man. And to me, that's a trait. That factors in, and Chris, he does a ton of college work just like I do. To me, that's a trait. That factors into an evaluation.
Yep.
You spoke about Drake May's ability to be mobile in the pocket. I think back to the Bills game against the Dolphins, where they were getting Tua Tagovailoa to move out of the pocket quite a bit and move behind the line of scrimmage. But the Bills' defensive line couldn't get Tua Tagovailoa on the ground with as many opportunities as there were to get Tagovailoa on the ground. May has been sacked 13 times. Is this a good opportunity for Buffalo's defensive line to have a chance at getting May on the ground? Why has May been sacked so many times?
I mean, I think, you know, young quarterbacks do at times have a tendency to hold the ball, you know, in certain situations. He's done that at times. That's part of the growing process, I think. You know, to me, that's not an extreme amount. I mean, they played four games. It's not like he's been sacked, you know, 6-7 times a game. I can't remember every sack. I've watched, obviously, every game, so I can't remember all the details on that. But you know, the one thing that I will say, and it'll be interesting in this game, and just to sort of move it in another direction, if I could, one of the things that has really stood out watching the Buffalo defense this year is they've struggled to stop the run, guys, and you guys know that. And while the Patriots have not been a great running football team. Obviously, they have Stevenson. They drafted Henderson in the second round, a player I really like coming out. I don't know what you thought, Chris. I really liked Henderson a lot. They just haven't been able to get a consistent run game working. And it'll be interesting to see, because I guess Ed Oliver, I don't know what his status is. I guess, has he not practiced this week? I don't think he has. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not there. But that could be a big loss. You know, Deion Walker has actually played pretty well, getting more and more snaps every week. But for some reason, they've just not done the job that I know Sean McDermott and staff would like them to do versus the run. And, you know, you hope that any given week, that's not a huge, huge factor in how the game gets played out.
Okay, Greg, so I wanted to also talk about the Patriots on the defensive side. They have some horses up front. We don't know if Milton Williams is going to play. He returned to practice today, actually, with a knee injury. What have you seen on that side of the ball? I mean, the Bills have Josh Allen. They've got the good run game, the offensive line. But with Mike Vrabel being a former linebacker, defensive-minded coach, what have you seen in terms of improvements from this Patriots defense from the Patriots defense a season ago?
I kind of like their defense, Chris. I mean, I think they've got some really solid type players. You know, maybe not superstars, but I think it's a well-schemed defense with good players. You know, you look at guys like Robert Spillane. I mean, he's been a really good player for years. Maybe a lot of people don't know about him, but he's one of those glue type players. Barmore's a good player. Now that they've got Gonzalez back, they're really good at the corner position. The rookie who won the starting job at safety, Craig Woodson, I did him coming out of Cal. Amazingly enough, Cal had like four guys that are really, you know, important guys that were drafted that are in the league now. I really liked him as well. I mean, this is actually a pretty good defensive unit. They're not flashy. They're not going to pressure you a ton necessarily. You know, sometimes four games, it's more team and opponent specific, so you don't know necessarily what the trend is. You never know in a given game how they might approach a specific opponent. But, you know, they haven't been a heavy blitz team through four games. So, but it's just, to me, a solid defense. You know, they're playing a team in Buffalo that is very balanced on offense, you know, with a quarterback that any given play can be special. It's just, it's a hard offense to play against because they run it so consistently and so well, and then you've got, you know, Josh Allen. So it's been a solid defense for New England, and that doesn't surprise me with Mike Vrabel there.
And one more for me, Greg. As you talk about the defense that the Patriots have, I can't help but think about their rushing defense going up against Buffalo's rushing offense. I mean, allowing under 80 rushing yards per game,
I know,
as we've touched
yeah.
on a little bit, and the Bills averaging over 160 rushing yards per game. Why will this be such a good test for this multiple rushing offense that we're seeing out of Buffalo to start the season?
Well, Maddie, one thing we know for sure is that the Bills aren't going to change the way they play. I mean, this is kind of who they are. And it was the way they were last year as well. Now, again, does that mean that, you know, they're going to come out running the ball? I mean, they could certainly come out and have Josh throw it a little bit. I mean, he's, you know, they're more than capable of doing that. But I think in terms of who the Bills are offensively, how they want to play, how they want to establish what they are, this will be a good test. This is a good run defense. You know, Vrabel is the kind of guy all week long is making this a game of manhood on that side of the ball. That's what coaches do. It's a game where, hey, you know, you got to buck up if you're the defense and you got to just stop these guys. We have to be more physical than they are. That's what it often comes down to. I mean, obviously, you have to play your gaps the right way. You know, every coach talks about that. But then there's that manhood element of, you know, we just have to be stronger than they are.
Greg, thank
and we
you
just
so
have
much
to,
for
you know,
joining
be more physical than they are. And that's
Live.
The way coaches coach when you're facing a team that runs the ball
just a little
really,
bit.
Really
so
well.
Thanks for the time. We appreciate everything. We're going to go to break. Don't go anywhere, because when we return, a lot more on this Bills-Patriots matchup on Sunday Night Football coming up next here on One Bills Live. We're presented by Collider Health on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you look at our third down, we got back on track on third down. They were 2-for-4 in the red zone. We did. We started three times on the, I believe it was a plus 49, once on the plus 40. And to come away with 6 points and a takeaway, that's a tremendous job by our guys with resiliency and clamping down. And to come away with that, if you said a team starts in plus territory four times, you'd think that someone would come away with more points. But we've got a lot to improve on from that game.
Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich on the way they came through in the win over the Saints. We'll get to Joe Marino here at the Locked On Bills podcast in one moment. Teased a couple things, though. Joe mentioned Dylan Gabriel gets a start for the Browns against Brian Flores and the Vikings. Yeah, good luck, Rook. That's going to be a tough one. The under in that game, I bet. The over-under is probably a pretty low number because Cleveland's defense is very good still.
I imagine it's in the 30s.
And yeah. I also teased what Stephon Diggs had to say about Bills Mafia because Mike Reese has a big piece at ESPN.com about Diggs and his role in New England and him as a teammate and coming back from an injury. And there's only a little bit at the end about the Bills and this matchup. And he said, quote, Diggs did, "It's going to be a crazy atmosphere. Obviously, I spent a lot of years there. They have one of the best fan bases in the game, if not the best fan base," end quote. Oh, sorry, one more. "So shout out to them." There you go. That's what he said to Mike Reese.
That's how you don't cause a headline right there.
Right, right. Tyreek Hill's like, that's not that big a deal. Right.
Right. By the way, that Cleveland-Minnesota over-under is 35.5.
Okay, it's a low.
Crazy low.
That's a low number. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills and Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Joe, early review or early prediction for Dylan Gabriel starting his first game against Brian Flores. It's a pretty tall order for him.
Yeah, that's a tall order. I wonder the thought process there between Joe Flacco and a guy who's seen every blitz imaginable but can't move, or the rookie who can move but, you know, obviously some limitations there. I think you're exactly right. Bet the under on that one.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game for them. Minnesota, meanwhile, is a great defense, and their offense, we'll see, a work in progress no matter who the quarterback is. So, Joe, it's Bills and Patriots this week. Before we get to that, let's talk about this Bills defense and where they stand right now. They're not very good against the run. We know that. And during the week, we had a couple callers, you know, changes they could make, players coming back. What do you think is the number one problem with what's happening in the run game defensively?
Well, I think if you look at the most recent game against the Saints, it was tackling. The Saints had 165 of their 189 yards after contact. And the yards before contact on average is 0.7. That's really good. I mean, that was a top seven mark in the NFL this past week. The Bills were pretty decent in terms of holding at the point of attack and not getting displaced in the run game. It was, can these guys get downhill and tackle? And you saw a lot of whiffs. Terrell Bernard with 3 missed tackles, Taron Johnson with 2, Taylor Rapp with 1 missed tackle, but that also doesn't count the bad angles that he took that didn't put him in position to miss the tackle. So I thought it was a little bit more like the first game of the season where, you know, I thought the front was okay in terms of the line. It was just these guys filling, getting downhill and making good tackles. And it's been an issue for this defense, I think, throughout the McDermott era. But especially in the most recent game.
Yeah, it's something I've heard you talk about, and we've talked about before, about like it's been a problem during the McDermott era. We know Sean McDermott's big on fundamentals, so is there an explanation for why it might continue to plague them?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Structurally, the Bills play with lighter boxes. That's not been as drastic this year, but they were back up above 50% light box presentation of the Saints this past week. And I think when you just, you know, you have less bodies that are committed to being closer to the line of scrimmage, you're filling from depth, right? You're taking longer angles to the football, and so it's harder to calculate those correctly. I think that's probably the leading cause. Number two would probably be some size. You know, the Bills typically go with some smaller linebackers. And you've seen that as an issue, particularly with Milano and Bernard. Both guys will miss tackles and slide off of tackles. And then, you know, they have been a little bit lean with their D-line. I wouldn't say that's the case anymore. They've definitely gotten a lot bigger up front. But I think it's kind of the combination of those things that put some stress. Obviously, a lot of nickel, a lot of asking Taron Johnson to fit. So I think it's a combination of those things that makes it difficult. It's not I don't think it's that they don't want to tackle well. I'm sure they do. I just think some of those challenges based on the play style leads to more opportunities to miss tackles.
Yeah, I wonder, Joe, maybe this is wrong, but when they're always hunting for turnovers and trying to punch balls out,
sure,
that maybe could play into it. I don't think that would be every play, but they are so they're so aggressive on that front that could happen, I think, once in a while, too.
Yeah, and it's never one thing, right? It's a combination of all those things, and I think that's a good thing to invoke, Joe. And I think a good example of that would be the first touchdown run by Kendre Miller against the Bills in the Saints game, where, you know, Tre'Davious White, he played for the punch-out, right? And he said, okay, you're either going to score a touchdown or I'm going to punch this thing out. And obviously the touchdown was scored.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here. Joe, the pass defense, you know, it's funny. Sometimes the stats early in the season, something might look good because you're so bad at something else. And I think we might have that with this Bills pass defense. They're pretty good in yards per attempt against. But I don't know if I should buy that I can trust this pass defense yet. You want to talk about whether it's the caliber of the starting quarterback on the other side, in two of them being Spencer Rattler and Justin Fields. This week it's a tough test. So do you have faith in this pass defense? Are they starting to put it together back there?
I feel somewhat okay about it. I think where it's going to be kind of make or break is going to be how the pass rush develops, in my opinion. And of course that comes from getting some players back. I think two of your most important pass rushers, Michael Hoyt and Ed Oliver, you don't have them right now. And I think, you know, that'll be a big part of this pass defense becoming better, because I think that's where it starts. On the back end, I think they can play better. I think you can – I mean, honestly, Trey White, I think he's probably – you know, he's got his own limitations, but I don't think he's been the disaster some people are painting him to be. I think, you know, Taron Johnson and Taylor Rapp and Christian Benford are all, you know, three players that I would point to that are capable of playing a lot better than they have to this point. And I think that's the good news, is that you know that they're capable of more. And so you get some pass rush back, your players that are supposed to be better play better, and I think you have a formula. But, you know, it definitely looks shaky, right? I mean, there's a lot of open guys. There's a lot of uncontested throws. I mean, really, the Bills haven't made that many plays in the ball this year. So, and I think that's because they're not as connected in coverage or not as tight. So I think that can improve. It's definitely something where the Bills have been pretty sound throughout the McDermott era. And so I think there's an opportunity for it to improve, but they got to show it. They got to become better rushing the passer. And, you know, some of those key pillars of that secondary need to be better than what they've been for the first 4 weeks of the season.
So what did that rotation then with Trey White and Dorian Strong mean to you? Was that more a stylistic thing in the moment, or do you think that was more about kind of the bigger picture?
Well, I think they need to get some experience to their depth at cornerback. I mean, right now Ingram's been an inactive player, and I think they're probably staring at a situation where your top three corners, we'll say not Christian Benford, he's fine, but it's this Trey White, and then it's Dorian Strong and Maxwell Harrison. Like, you want to make sure that those guys have some reps, and Harrison doesn't have any. And Strong is building an inventory. And, you know, the Bills have had to use their corner depth every year in high leverage moments late in the season. And so I think it's pretty smart to get some reps in there to make sure that when guys are stepping in, it's not something that they've never been asked to do before. So I think it's probably that. And certainly I think you look at Trey White and you're aware of some of the limitations that he has. I think he's been a really good tackler. I don't think he's given up that much in coverage, but that's because he has to play calculated, right? He has to stay with that leverage over the top and just kind of play downhill with vision and come down and attack, and that's going to lead to some completions, you know, especially if your pass rush can't get there. So I think it's an awareness to some of the Trey White's limitations, but you've also got to get some experience for these young guys that are probably going to have to play.
Joe Marino joining us. Joe, I want to ask you about Dalton Kincaid. He had another big catch in this game, a 20-yard catch and a touchdown. And looking at tight end statistics this year, Kincaid is second among tight ends with catches of 20 yards or more and doing it on fewer targets. Like, he's got 18 targets to Tyler Warren and Brock Bowers, who each have 27. And those are the guys that are near the top of the league in explosive catches from tight ends. And I wonder if we should start to see and ask for more from Joe Brady to get the ball to Dalton Kincaid, because this year it is definitely working. He's got three touchdowns and three catches of 20 yards or more, and it's only on 14 receptions, only on 18 targets.
Yes, it's a fun story to tell. I'm elated that we're entering week five and people want more Dalton Kincaid. I was hopeful that this could happen. You know the sermons that I preached all off season long about this, so. I definitely have that appetite as well. And, I mean, good luck on a week-to-week basis. If you're not Josh Allen or James Cook, like, who knows? Who knows if it's going to be a big game for Kincaid or Coleman or Palmer or Shakir or, you know, some of the ancillary pieces. It's truly is everybody eats, and that makes it difficult, you know, to really know on a weekly basis who's going to go off. But you can certainly see, you know, the skill set and the opportunities and the production and, say, man, if you did that a little bit more, could you have even more? And so I if I'm Joe Brady, that's definitely something I'm thinking a lot about, is how do I get more opportunities to feature Dalton Kincaid, because it's really been a really good part of what this offense has been. And it's not like he's overworked or overused. Yeah. You know, I said on my podcast this week, I'd love for them to get back to using Dalton Kincaid as an extension of the run game in some ways, where they can get some catch and run opportunities. And, you know, as defenses respect that even more, you'd like to think that some of those chances down the field show up even more frequently. So, yeah, I think that's a big part of where this offense can go and how, you know, a great offense can be even better.
How much of a challenge does this New England team pose to the Bills? Is this the second toughest game they've got this year? Baltimore, of course, at the start of the season is a good team, regardless of what's happened to them since then. Would you put New England as the second best team they've played yet, or are they behind Miami?
No, I have a hard time kind of figuring out who this Patriots team is. I really respect their quarterback. You know, there's no question. This is a good young quarterback that's tough and can do a lot of dynamic things on the field as a runner, as a thrower. I think he's going to be a really, really good player. I don't know about anything else on this team. They haven't run the ball well. Their offensive line is very shaky. You know, Drake May still getting sacked on nearly 10% of his dropbacks. His sack rate is even higher than it was last year. You know, like I said, they haven't really run the football. They played pretty good against the run, but defensively. But, I mean, we're talking about some really pedestrian teams with the Raiders, Dolphins, Steelers, and Panthers as their opponents to this point. They certainly showed their youth and inexperience in week three when they turned it over five times and lost to Pittsburgh by seven. You know, and then they turn around and they smoke the Panthers, get two miscellaneous touchdowns. It's like, I don't know who the Patriots are. The only thing I'm confident in is that Drake May's a good young quarterback. And I think they can probably defend the pass because they have good outside corners. But, you know, I think they're shaky kind of the middle of the field with their safeties and linebackers. So I think we have a lot to learn about this New England team. And, you know, like I said, really the only thing I feel comfortable is knowing that I think Drake May's a good young quarterback.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, part of our weekly visits with him. Joe, thanks again for the time, and we'll chat next week.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
Drake May and the Patriots in town for Sunday night football. They are 2-2. They won three games last year, and they are up to two wins this year through four games. And after this Bills game, a nice soft little schedule where it's who is it again? The Saints.
They play the Saints. I think it's the Saints, the Titans, and the Browns.
Okay.
Three games. I don't know if you expect them to win them all, but they'll be favored going into all three. And if you don't win this game and they're a game back with those 3 weeks, like it the race will feel a little bit more alive than
I think
it
has. They'd be within striking distance.
There hasn't felt like there is a race yet.
No, not yet.
But if they beat the Bills Sunday and they're a game back with three of the easiest opponents they'll play, that's going to feel like, okay, we got a fight here.
I have a question about the Patriots for you, top of the hour, and I have a stat for you on the Browns. It's pretty wild. We'll get as well. If you're on hold, we'll get to your phone calls, 803-0550. Thanks for being patient. Head up, Paul, head Joe there. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think Michael's ever done drugs.
It's Mike Shope.
I don't know if anyone's ever offered him any.
Let's go over some of the symptoms of marijuana use, shall we? You tell me who this sounds like.
It's the Bulldog.
Slow moving. Inattentive. Dull. Constantly snacking. Shows a lack of motivation.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Just to wrap, maybe we're not all the way back to we love our notifications, even after that Splash Sports reminder that your Survivor pick wasn't in. We're back to this is killing me.
I just got a notification from Ticketmaster that says, get those Canisius hockey tickets you thought were gone. I mean, I'm sorry, what? I nothing. I mean, go Canisius hockey, but what?
I will not let my moderate, severe indifference toward college hockey define me. Just say it out loud. It'll feel good. Mike Giardi with us, Boston Sports Journal. I love when the Bills play the Patriots because then we get to talk to Mike. Assuming he says yes.
I miss you guys. How you been?
It's been good here.
We're good. It's nice to hear from you again, Mike. Thanks for making the time.
Not excited about Canisius hockey? What are we talking about?
I am excited about Canisius hockey. That I found out earlier today that a kid that we know is actually one of their goalies this year. So I'm excited for that. But it's just a weird thing that I got a notification.
Oh, hang on,
Mike. You could show up 2 minutes before faceoff, and I think I could get you in. Okay, like
nice.
I don't understand why I'm getting a notification. I thought they were gone.
The perks of the job, Mike. Wait a minute. Did you say it out loud to somebody? Is that why you got the notification?
No, I did not. Okay. But I saw on Twitter that Chase Clark, who was connected to my son when we were playing, he was playing, is one of their goalies now. And I was like, oh, Chase Clark is on Canisius. Good
for him. Of
course,
you know, Mike being in the Boston area, I'm not sure how conversant he is in college hockey, but if you ever need somebody, Mike, we got Bulldog right here. He can go 10 rounds with you on college hockey.
So I used to have to cover it a ton back in the early days of my TV career in Boston because of BCBU always, right? And then,
right.
And then you had the beanpot. So, you know, I could hang all right.
All right. Well, so Patriots at Bills Sunday night. Prime time for New England. And the Bills now, this is old hat. But for a younger team, Drake May, you know, getting this spot in Buffalo, do you think he's up to it?
I think he's playing really well right now, by and large. You know, there was obviously he can't yada yada a couple turnovers that he had against Pittsburgh, but it's been 3 weeks of really efficient quarterback play, by and large. What I will tell you is Drake tends to be amped up for every game, and normally that first drive can be a little bit of a roller coaster. And based on how he was talking this week, I would be careful in the first 5-6 rows of the stands because you might get an unintended target because he might be so jacked up that he fires one in there.
Ooh, I happen to be sitting in row 3 and holding
on a swivel.
And holding a ball that my son and I got at a game once, just randomly. I brought the ball in today, so maybe you're speaking this into existence. We will see.
Well, I'm very. I'd said it this way, Mike. Like I would not be surprised if New England could pull an upset here. I mean, the opponents the Bills have faced here the last 3 weeks
I would not have ever gotten close to saying the same thing. You know, covering the spreads is a different thing. But to me, the quarterback is such an important piece. And if he can keep his head on straight, like I feel like he's, I mean, he's the next guy in the division and maybe even the conference that I think we should be worrying about.
Yeah, the marriage between he and Josh McDaniels and Mike Vrabel, who very much has a hand in everything, has gone very well so far. People were wondering, you know, I remember even talking to people around the league being like, McDaniels, that's so uninspired. And I'm like, well, you know, he does have a good track record beyond Tom, not as a head coach, but just you talk about the quarterbacks that he worked with. He cobbled together a good offense, a good-ish offense in 2020, the COVID year, when they signed Cam Newton in July and he couldn't throw. And yet, you know, whatever, they were 7-9. They didn't go to the playoffs or anything, but it was like there were pieces of a competent offense there, and you're like, how is he doing this with that guy that can't play anymore? So you give him someone with the physical tools of Drake, and that's one of the reasons I think Josh was very, very interested in the job long before the job mm-hmm. came open, was like, he sees it. He sees what the kid is capable of, and like, hey, I'd like to work with him. And there are times when you watch Drake play and you can hear Josh in his ear sort of like, hey, no, just throw it away, just do that. So he's still learning those parts of it, yeah. You know, as I mentioned, the two turnovers. But then, like, there was a similar play to the fumble he had against Pittsburgh when, against Pittsburgh, everything breaks down around him. He wisely puts the ball to his chest. He's going to run with it or get down, right? And then all of a sudden he sees Trevion Henderson leak out in front of him, and he's like, ooh, maybe I can backhand pitch the ball to him like, you know, say Josh Allen does to Spencer Hawes. And the next thing you know, ball comes away from his body. Herbig chops it down, ball's out. Well, last week against Carolina, and he said, you know what? I'm just going to take the one-yard sack. And my offensive lineman will be mad at me because I took the sack, but I didn't turn the ball over. And that is like sort of the progress they're trying to make with him and getting him to realize, like, you don't need to win every play.
Yeah.
Sometimes that right there is the right thing to do.
The linemen will be mad, but whatever. I'll just buy them a truck when the season's over. Right. Like, we'll be okay.
He's got the money. He can afford it.
Yeah. At least maybe when he gets his second contract. Mike, I've been referring to him a few times this week as Josh Allen Light, and I don't want to be lazy about it. Like, how does that land with you? Because I feel like there are comparisons, but it's all none of it's all feels like about three quarters, like size, arm strength, all of it. Is that a compliment, or is that doing him a little dirty?
So I think from an athletic standpoint, he reminds me more of Herbert than he does of Josh. Like, I think Josh is kind of he's a freak. And I mean that in a good way, like mm-hmm. not quite Cam Newton freakish at 200. I can't believe I've mentioned Cam Newton now twice, but you know, that 255-pound, 260-pound bowling ball at running back, but I mean, a quarterback, but Josh, his ability to withstand some of the physical punishment and dish it out is uncommon for the quarterback position. And Drake's body, he's 230-ish right now. He's still not grown man strong yet in that regard. So I see him as a really good athlete who's capable of making a ton of plays with his legs and certainly can access any part of the field with his arm. But at this point, I see it more as a Herbert-like thing than a Josh-like thing.
With Mike Giardi, well, you know, another way of asking a question about May and like what we've got here Sunday night is – Bulldog even alluded to it, and we were talking earlier about this. Like, the Tua thing in the AFC East with Allen, I think, is close to over. Like, the Bills have beaten the Dolphins almost, I mean, they've lost to him once in 14 games or something like that. Like, that has sort of been written. And the Jets, I think, are still trying to figure out what they're going to be at quarterback. They drafted Zach Wilson at 2, right? And then that went away.
Yeah.
Now Fields. May is in the spot to sort of become the guy here for these two teams, if not for the AFC East. I'm not talking on like the elite, most elite level, but for a division rivalry, I feel like it's a pretty safe bet, Mike, that May is going to be there a while.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the progression from year one to year two, you know, we always talk about the year two leap, and after week one, you're like, oh, I don't know, it didn't look as great as you kind of thought it was going to. And then how quickly he settled in Miami. And then, like I mentioned, like everything around the two turnovers against Pittsburgh was outstanding. He obviously can't like just brush those away. Mm-hmm. But like they have him playing in a certain manner. I think Josh has done a good job of, we had this big conversation here, taking on his plate. Does he have too much on his plate? And Josh and Drake are like, no. But they've done more of the boot action, play action stuff, get them outside, and then it's, you know, it's a high-low read. Or sometimes if you flood it, there's three reads there, but it's you got to get rid of it quick or you're tuck and run. And I think he's real comfortable with that. And then I think when they do that, then it makes him comfortable elsewhere, like when he's sitting in the pocket. And so I think they're still learning each other, but they're sort of marrying that idea. And his growth, and like I said, the ability to he's not been a repeat offender error-wise, and I think that's critical, especially for a young quarterback. And now what's happening, I think, too, is, and again, we're early in the process, but I think teammates are looking at him now going, like, okay, he was drafted to be the guy, but we didn't win but one game with him from start to finish last year. And now, okay, we've seen him play some gems of football games early in the year, granted against lesser opponents, but, like, I think they're starting to look at each other going, like, no, he's the guy. He's that mm-hmm. guy. And, like, there's not a ton of them in the league, and they think maybe that they have that guy. So we'll see if it continues to progress this way, but he's certainly laying down the right path.
How about the supporting cast? Let's start on the offensive line. Of course, the high pick, Will Campbell. There's another rookie next to him at guard. What's the offensive line outlook here?
So much better than it was last year or even the year before. And, you know, some of the metrics have them, like, rated highly. I think it's really hard to sort of measure offensive line play unless you're actually just watching it and you know all the assignments. But Campbell has held his own. You know, he had a fourth quarter sort of meltdown a little bit against Vegas in the opener. And then Herbig gave him some problems in the second half of the game against the Steelers, including that, you know, the sack, which really was Drake's fault. But regardless, he's been good. Like the level of play that they're getting from their left tackle this year versus the last two is like night and day. The kid you mentioned, the other rookie, Jared Wilson, he missed his first game last week with a knee injury. He's been limited in practice this week. He did talk to us, which generally would give you an idea that maybe he's got a chance to play. Without him, they went with Ben Brown, who's sort of a journeyman. He was their center last year after David Andrews went down. But by and large, it's been good. Like Morgan Moses, you know, he's relatively healthy. He's 34-year-old, but he's playing at a pretty good level. So, like, that's made a big difference in terms of pass protection. I don't feel like Drake has been under siege much in the first 4 weeks. They're still struggling to run the ball, but that's also kind of not the offensive line's fault. I think they've done a decent job. I think the backs just haven't been as productive as they need to be. I think they're one of the best teams in terms of, you know, yards before contact.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's what's happening after that that's not good enough. So that has been a major upgrade. And I said, like, if they could get to, like, the 21st or 22nd best offensive line, what a difference that would make. Well, you know, some people will tell you they're 12th or 13th best offensive line right now, and then you kind of understand why they've been scoring and moving the ball relatively well here early in the year.
Some people would also say that your point there is a subtle plea for the Patriots to use Travion Henderson more. I don't know. Maybe not. But, like, if you want to take advantage of a good line, right, Mike? Like, maybe is it time for Henderson?
He's been a little impatient as a runner. And it think they're still trying to get him to, he's obviously got this great speed, but settle down just a little bit, give it another heartbeat, and then that cut that you make, you have already, the defender will be getting blown out, and then you're cutting up and you're finding more room to run, and then obviously, as we know, that speed to get to the second level is real. They just haven't been able to find it just yet, but they're, you know, they're still pleased with him. They still think they can get him where we saw him in the summer.
With Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. Of course, this is also Stephon Diggs' first game back in Buffalo since leaving the Bills. They faced him last year when he played for Houston, and then he was hurt after that. But, you know, there'll be some emotions probably in this game and in the crowd Sunday night. How has Diggs looked to you?
He doesn't look as explosive, which I guess is not a surprise, right? Considering it's not even been a year since the ACL injury. But I got to tell you, I was surprised that he was ready to go from week one. And what he has proven to be thus far is a very reliable guy and someone that has already developed a good rapport with Drake May. I think it's, I want to say it's 22 targets this season, 19 catches.
Okay.
And obviously he had the breakout game against Carolina. Some of that was Carolina. But also, like, a credible, like, 33-yard back shoulder throw from him and Drake that sort of illustrates where that relationship is at. And if he can continue to be, I don't think he has to be a 100-yard guy every week, but if he can continue to give them in that, you know, 5-6 catch range and be someone who moves the chains, I mean, you've watched this offense the last however many years and looked at that position. I think every time we talk, we're like, that position is not good. Mm-hmm. He puts them in a place where they may not be good, but they're a hell of a lot better than where they've been, and that's also making a difference.
And the tight ends have been good, really good. I mean, and it's funny, they're both veteran guys. And for me, I mean, I don't know, this doesn't have to mean anything to anyone else. Like, Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper have been guys that I would easily confuse with one another, thinking about tight ends in the league, and they're on the same team now, which I think helps.
It's that H.
Right?
Yeah, it's a big it's always been a big part of McDaniel's offenses, you know, and I mean, you can go back to Gronkowski and Hernandez, and those are two different, you know, different breeds on a lot of different fronts, obviously. But, like, that's always been what they wanted to do. They've run a lot of 12 personnel this year. In fact, I think sometimes they've been a little stubborn with it because I don't know that either one of those guys is really would even be an average blocker at this point in their careers. But that's something that they like to live in. But they are reliable. The quarterback trusts them greatly. And, you know, it's funny, every week they've had someone different lead the team in receiving. It was Booty in week one. It was Ramondre in week two. Then it was Hunter in week three going crazy. And then it was Diggs in week four. But then sprinkled in there, you know, the touchdown to Hunter last week, a big 24-yard tight end screen to Austin Hooper. Like, they get those guys involved and like to keep them involved over the course of the game. And it's I think the quarterback likes it.
Should be Henderson in week five, by the way. I'll just say that again.
All right.
Slipping that in.
Stumping for Henderson. Fantasy interests here, Mike. How about on the other side of the ball here? Gonzalez back last week. Yeah. How did he look? And is he, you know, all systems go moving forward?
Yeah, he looked fine. I mean, he pretty much played a full workload until the game was out of reach, and then they took him out. I think it was 48 or 49 snaps. They didn't do, you know, I'm not that necessarily Carolina's offense requires anybody to travel with anyone, although that's not bad, McMillan. But, like, they played sides, and they didn't go crazy with man-to-man stuff, but he recovered well. He says he feels fine this week, expects, you know, that he's capable of doing all the stuff he's doing. And this is kind of how they built their defense, right? Like, they wanted this a strong interior, and they've been getting that with Barmore and Milton Williams, although, as you guys mentioned in the update there, Williams did not practice today, and that's a concern because I'm assuming that happened in practice yesterday, because we talked to him before practice on Wednesday, and he was in great spirits and moving fine, and then we didn't see him at all today in the locker room, and he wasn't out of practice. That would be a tough blow for them if they don't have him. But it's those two interior guys, and then it's the two corners. You know, as Mike Vrabel said, we want to play cat coverage. You got this cat, I got that cat. They haven't had that until last week. They didn't have to deploy it that way last week against Carolina. And maybe they look at Buffalo and say, you know, who's the number one? But there's also, you know, money downs. That's where you can start to do some of that stuff too. They didn't, like I said, they didn't do it last week, but I could see them like, you know, we fear Kincaid on third downs. We might move one of these guys over Kincaid on a third down or whoever, whatever the Khalil Shakir, whatever they think is the danger zone there in those spots that they might do that.
You mentioned Barmore. Is he fine? There was, like, last year, blood clots, like serious health issues. Yeah. He's all good?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They managed him all spring and summer. And even during the course of the first 3 weeks of the season, 4 weeks of the season, he's missed a day of practice. And it's not a health thing. It's just they go, whatever, maintenance. So they did a lot with that over the summer where it was like, yeah, he's practicing today, but not really. You know, he's working one-on-ones with one of the pass rush specialist guys and not participating in team drills and things like that. So I don't know if that's a result of what happened. My guess is it is. They you know, he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. So, you know, you can only get so far with that.
Mm-hmm.
But last week he chewed up Carolina. And granted, it was against backups because Robert Hunt is on IR. But, like, that's the thing that you're supposed to do, right? When you're paid that kind of money, you're that type of impact player like he was in 2023, you're supposed to take the lesser guy and throw him around. And they did. And then that opens things up for Williams. And when they're doubling Williams, which has been more of what's happened over the first 4 weeks, then it's Barmore getting the single blocks and causing havoc. So it's been a good combination. As Williams was telling me yesterday, he's like, I told you guys since the day they signed me, there's going to be pick your poison. You can't double both of us. You know, you just can't do it. So they got to pick. And when they pick, it's up to the other guy to make them pay. And they've done a pretty good job of that so far.
Last thing, Mike, quickly, the Bills so far, I mean, 4-0, and I'm not going to try to tell you, which you already know, about how just in a given week, things can really look different than the week before, like thinking of the AFC and the league. But there's a feeling, I think, maybe around football, like if it's not their year this year, when will it ever be, given how Kansas City and Baltimore starts their off to?
I wonder from, and you guys are obviously much closer to it every single day, but like, I still wonder about the defense a little bit. Like, and I know there's injuries, but you start to wonder, like, Matt's probably never going to be fully healthy. Like, that's just maybe the track of his career now. And, like, those sorts of things, like, are they a playmaker short on defense would be my concern for them. Or are they maybe not stout enough on the interior and teams are being able to run on them? Like, that's going to be a question that Brandon Bean's going to have to answer probably soon. I know they get a couple guys back off suspension list, and maybe that makes. But if I was him, I'd keep an eye on the market and see what's going on, because you're right. It's everything's lining up for them just perfectly. You just, if you want to push it over that, if you want to give yourself a little bit more ammunition as you go into the latter half of the season.
We'll talk about that some more here soon. Thank you, Mike. I'm not sure if you're making the trip, but I'm looking forward to Sunday night.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Very good.
I'm looking forward to it. I get to say goodbye to, well, it's not Ralph Wilson anymore, but, you know, I've said it a million times. It's one of my favorite places, if not my most favorite place to watch a game, because that crowd is crazy, and that environment's going to be awesome on Sunday night.
Yeah, it should be white out. Plus, you'll get to see the new place across the street as you sit from the from the press box, which is surreal, I think, to many of us.
Yeah,
very good. Thanks for your time, as always, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, Bills and Patriots in Orchard Park Sunday night. You know, yesterday, I guess it was a caller who brought up the trade deadline, and then other people started to bring up ideas, and here we are leaving our conversation with Mike talking about a piece on defense, which is kind of where your head was yesterday. 803-0550 if you want to get in on that. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Sal at 5. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Paul Hamilton.
We should be friends.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
Phaneuf just pooped his pants.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good Wednesday morning, Jeremy and Joe. What a beautiful day out there. A little cooler than it has been the last couple weeks. High today, 68. Woke up this morning, it was in the 40s. Same kind of deal tomorrow, but sunshine. Lots of sunshine. Game time for Sunday, 8 o'clock Sunday night. The forecast calls for temperatures right about like the upper 60s, 68 degrees for game time on Sunday night.
All right.
For the Bills and Patriots in the rivalry series game for those Bills uniforms. Paul Hamilton joins us because the Sabres have a home game tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
So, Paul, it's not easy to make a case that a preseason game is really important in the NHL, but I might say that tonight is an important game for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who is slated to get time in net, and we'll see how he feels because he's been nursing some injury, and his timeline has kind of been uncertain, but he's going to play tonight.
Yeah, he seems, from an injury standpoint, fine. You know, he's been practicing fully, and he doesn't seem to be laboring at all. You know, I watch him usually quite closely, and it doesn't seem like, well, he doesn't want to move this way or doesn't want to move that way or is trying to be careful or anything like that. So it's just a question whether Lindy wants to go with the what he did with the other two goalies and in this first preseason game play him 40 minutes or play him the whole way and then on Friday definitely play him the whole way because that's what he did with the other two. You know, in their first game they played 40, in their second game they played 60. So he hadn't decided yet when we talked to him yesterday which way he wanted to go. But Lukanen, as long as nothing happens injury-wise, I think you're going to see him in both games.
And he would be on track, Paul, to be the night one starter if he doesn't have any setbacks?
I think so. The way it seems, you know, that they're doing it this way. Because today is the game where most of the guys you will see against the Rangers will play. And then Friday is the one where most of the guys you'll see with the Penguins will play. And the Sabres will call up mostly Amerks and play in that final game. That's the way the preseason goes. I mean, the home team usually is more representative of what you'll see during the season, and the road team is more representative of what you'll see with the farm club. So it's just kind of the way – that's what happened, the Red Wings, Sabres, home and home. Both teams played their regulars at home, and both teams played their Amerks or Grand Rapids guys on the road.
So, Paul, if Lukanen is okay and plays and looks good and no setbacks between now and next week, are they rolling into the season with three goalies? I mean, Kevin Adams has said in the past he doesn't like three goalies. I think I've heard Lindy say the same thing. But what else would they do other than carry all three?
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. I don't know why they set themselves up for this. I don't know why you don't just sign a goalie to a PTO instead of signing him regularly and then running into this problem. I don't envision – I'm not saying it won't happen, but I don't envision anybody going to Rochester to back up Devin Levi. I don't see that happening. I mean, Levi's the guy. They're not going to send one of the veteran goalies down there and let him play over Levi. That wouldn't make any sense.
Well, would Georgiev even do it? Like, if they tried to do that, I'd wonder if he would just bolt for Europe.
He's got his contract. Can't bolt for anywhere.
He couldn't just go to, like, the KHL if he wanted to?
No, he's got a contract. He just can't bolt. He would have to – the Sabres would have to let him out of his contract. It would be a mutual – he would have to go on waivers, and then they would have to terminate the contract.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't just get up and leave without doing that. Maybe that's part of the deal. Maybe they did an under the table deal. Say,
a handshake.
Look, if it works out where we need you, we'll do this. If not, we'll just mutually agree to terminate the contract, and you can go on your way. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, that could be part of it.
Yeah. Other injury news, Paul. Jiří Kulík missed a couple of games. He's expected to play. Owen Power day-to-day because he had something happen at practice.
Yeah, Lindy Ruff did not seem all that concerned about that injury with Owen Power. And I talked to Kulík myself yesterday. We sat and chatted for a while, and he's perfectly fine. He said he just needed a couple of days, and there was no problem. At Byram, I actually saw him come back from Harbor Center. He was over there skating, as was Greenway. Lindy Ruff hopes to have Greenway in practice next week. They were both on the ice. I had forgotten to ask about Auslan. I noticed Auslan didn't get sent down to Rochester with everybody, and then I forgot about him. I saw him come over from Harbor Center, too. He was skating, and Lindy labeled him as week to week. But that's just more of a housekeeping thing because I think once he's ready, they will send him to Rochester. But, you know, if you're injured, you can't send him to Rochester. He has to stay up here. So that's what they're doing with him.
You know, Paul, as this group plays tonight, maybe we get a good look at the Sabres, for the most part, what they will be on opening night. They're getting, if I may, a little bit of love as they could compete for a playoff spot. The division, you've got Florida with major injuries. You've got Toronto with a big player that's gone in Mitch Marner. Do you think that this team has as good a chance as any of the last however many years? Like, I don't want to put a number on it, but do you like their chances to stay in this race given the moves they've made and where they are right now from a roster standpoint?
I can boil it simply for you. Tell me if you get Lukanen from 2 years ago or Lukanen from last year.
Paul, that's my answer. When people ask me how they're going to be, I say if they get saves, they'll be fine.
He said yesterday, like, I like their chances this year. But what did you say about the goaltending?
I said they got to get saves.
You said, I don't know who's going to make saves for them. I'm like, well, wait a minute. But that seems pretty important here.
But you boil it down the same. Like, if they get saves, they should be fine. Right.
Yeah, the big save at the big time, like Lukanen did, where it was like 35 games. It wasn't like just a few. He had some of the best numbers in the National Hockey League for 35 games, and in that time period was second to Vasilevskiy in games played. Did a great job, but that didn't go into, you know, he only did that sometimes last year. It wasn't consistent, and he kind of took a move backwards. So I've been saying that all summer. Anytime anybody asks me, I'll just say, tell me which Lukanen's showing up. And if the Lukanen from 2 years ago shows up, that they have a great chance, especially if Norris can stay healthy. I mean, he had a three-point game against Detroit, and, you know, he's a good two-way guy. You know, he can win you the face-offs. I mean, he won a face-off back to Thompson. The puck was in the net before I think the goaltender even knew it was on Thompson's stick. You know, and that was just a simply pull back, shoot it, bang, it's in the net. So, you know, those things, you know, that they're going to matter. So, and of course, if Dahlin stays healthy, you can't, I mean, in the 13 game, I always call it the losing streak. I guess there were three loser points in there. So it's not actually a loser streak, it's a winless streak. But Dahlin was not available for many of those games. And if he's not available, they've got some defensive depth, but they don't have defensive depth that's going to make up for Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, right. No, unless Power took like a monster step, but we'll see about that. The thing I've wondered, Paul, that could hold them back also from being one of these teams that gets into the mid-90s, competes in the division, would be, did they lose too much scoring this summer? But man, like, I don't know how much I want to take out of preseason, but it feels like every time that top line, Norris, Thompson, and Benson is on the ice, they look like they're dangerous in creating chances.
Well, many in the analytics community will say, and told me before Peterka even got traded, that they're better off without him because he was so bad defensively. I mean, his numbers are not good at all. And, you know, as far as, all right, can you make up the goals? Well, first of all, are you better defensively? Yes, I think they are. But, I do think, because they keep saying, you guys keep stressing out about who's going to make up the goals, and they're more concerned at who's going to keep the goals out of the net. But think about it. I mean, you got one goal out of Norris last year. So between Norris and Kulik had, what was it, around 13, 14, somewhere in there. So if Kulik gets you 13 more goals, which I think he could, and if Norris is healthy, you figure he's going to be around 30. There you go.
Yeah.
Right there are your goals. And does Quinn get better? I mean, Quinn, he didn't have a good season last year, but at the end of the day, he had 15 goals. You know, so does he improve? And he gets over 20, maybe, you know? I who knows? But I don't even think you have to talk about him or Benson as far as maybe them improving their goals. I think you just have to look at Kulik and Norris, and I think between the two of them, they can make up for it.
Yeah. Norris, like, what I might want to do there is include Cousins' production last year, but even that was only 11 goals. So between Norris and Cousins, it's 12. And like you said, if Norris stays healthy, you'd at the minimum expect, I think he's going to give you more than that.
I mean, he had a 35-goal year the year he was healthy. You know, he's a shooter, and if he's healthy, there's no reason to think that he can't be between 30 and 35 again.
Do you think their lines are, like, you feel like you know what their lines are going to be going into night one for the most part, maybe one change here or there?
Absolutely, yeah. They haven't really changed their lines, you know, throughout camp, other than when a couple of guys are injured, like when Kulik was out for a couple of practices. Now Greenway could change that. I mean, they haven't given up that Greenway is not going to be ready by opening day. But if Greenway is ready to play, then maybe Danforth doesn't play. You know, so, you know, right now, you know, you're looking at Norris with Benson and Thompson. You're looking at McLeod with Zucker and Tuck. You're looking at Kulik with Quinn and Doan. And you're looking at Krebs with Malenstein and Danforth. You know, they like Gertsen. Where he might fit in, not sure. If you're keeping three goalies, Gertsen's not going to fit in here right now. You're going to have to send him to Rochester. You know, right mm-hmm. now, and you'd probably have to either send Johnson down or waive Bryson to go down. If it's just sitting as the sixth defenseman, I send Johnson down. But I probably, if there's an injury, I'd bring him up and play him. If Samuelson's not ready, then Johnson, for me, goes in the lineup, and then Bryson's your number six. Pretty much, yes, I think it's set up.
Paul, as you're going through some of those names there, you know, for the casual fan that maybe doesn't know all these names of the newer players, do you feel like there's a chance they play with some of these other guys, like you mentioned Danforth and Josh Doan might be someone for this, that they'll have more energy, they'll have just more jump? Like, what is different about maybe the depth of their forward group that could make a difference this year?
If you want to say who's really been impressive in the preseason games, Doan would be right at the top of my list. I mean, he's going to be on your number two power play right now, and deservedly so. I mean, he's got one or two power play goals and is around the net constantly. I mean, and is, you know, the other teams don't like him going against him. They're looking for him sometimes. He's in the middle of things is how I like to put it. You know, he's in front of the net, and he's in the middle of all that. He's in the middle of being on the wall. Things get going, he's in the middle of that. You know, he wants to be in the middle of all that. He's got a great shot. I mean, that's one thing that he has, and he started playing pretty well and getting some points last year in the second half of the season, which was his first full season in the National Hockey League. So I remember when they traded for him, it's like, you know, there could be an upside to this guy. You know, and it was somebody that we found out that Adams insisted upon, and Utah said the same thing. That's why the trade took so long, because they didn't want to put him in there. And Adams said, then we're not doing the deal, and hung up. And Utah had to decide, do we want Paterka or don't we? Because he's not budging. And they put Doan into that deal. So, you know, I'm very, very curious to see, you know, how he's going to work into the lineup. And, you know, what are we talking about with this guy as far as, yep. you know, a young player and somebody that has an upside?
Paul Hamilton on the Sabres, who play tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins at KeyBank Center.
Paul, the big contract in the league yesterday, Kirill Kaprizov signs for $17 Crazy. Million. Dollars. I wonder what the next guys will sign for. Like, will Eichel be around that? Will McDavid go above that? And then do you think we wait until a couple more of those guys sign before those tier two contract year guys like Tuck start coming in? Or do you think maybe this could push the Sabres and other teams closer to their guys?
Well, you got to figure McDavid's going to get 20.
Yep.
You know, right?
Yep.
I mean, Kaprizov's a great player, but he's not better than McDavid. You know, he's not better than Eichel. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Eichel will get 20, but I think he'll get more than Kaprizov. And, you know, I've said this all along, whether Terry Pegula likes it or not, Alex Tuck holds all the cards here. And you are going to get crucified if Alex Tuck leaves, because you're back to square one then.
Yeah.
If Alex Tuck leaves, this part of the team is over, because in my opinion, none of them have said this, but in my opinion, Thompson goes, Darlene goes. I think if this season goes the way the seasons have gone, I think this is the last kick at the can for those guys. I think they all ask to be traded if they're on the bottom of the standings again this year. But mm-hmm. a fan favorite like Tuck, can you imagine what look at what the fans have been like the past couple of years. I'm not criticizing them. They have a lot of reason to be the way they've been. But if Tuck leaves,
yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like here. So Terry Pegula is going to have to get comfortable with the fact that you keep this guy, you're probably going to have to give him $10 million.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think eight and a half would have been the comfortable place, mm-hmm. but not with the way the salary cap has gone up. And none of these guys, there are a lot of guys in Tuck's shoes that haven't signed yet. It's not just McDavid, and it's not just, I mean, it's Kempe in Los Angeles.
Right.
There are a bunch of them.
Well, what they're doing, I think, Paul, is they're waiting for the big guys to set the pace. They don't want to sign for $8 million and then realize, oh, wait, the cap's gone up, so now everyone's willing to pay more, and I signed for what the old price would have been when the new price is $2.5-3 million higher.
Well, look at what Tate Thompson at 7.1 is going to be an absolute bargain. And he signed that contract. It's a 7-year deal that he signed in 2023.
All right, the cap's going to be $125 million by the time that deal's
done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can say Tate Thompson made a mistake by you know, signing that contract. And many thought it was too much.
Paul, go ahead.
Yeah.
It was on the Tuck conversation. You know, you can't remove the emotion from this one, and I agree with what you said about, like, Tuck holding the cards and what they do. Should they sign a 29-year-old, soon-to-be 30-year-old player to an 8-year extension for double digits on the old AAV? You know, like, is that a good move, or is it the move that you have to make, even though you might think it might not be the smartest thing to do?
Letter B. Because he's 30 years old when he signs the contract, because he has another year left on this deal. So, but, you know, and who knows? I mean, there are some players that are still very, very effective at 38. You know, so who knows what Alex Tuck will be like at 38. But, you got to do it.
Do you worry about his availability? I mean, he does, you know, he gets dinged up.
Yeah, at times. At times. I worry about a lot of it, but... He also improved greatly as a two-way player last year to a point where it was by far his best year. And now, you know, you're talking about the Selke, and he said, look at what I did last year isn't good enough. He goes, I want to be in the top five of the Selke voting every year.
Yeah, he got 7 top five Selke votes last year. 8, but that was like 15th. So if he's looking for top five, he's still got a little ways to go on that.
So that's what you're looking at with him. And usually when he puts his mind to something, he's pretty good at doing it. So, yeah, you don't want to sign a 30-year-old for 8 years. But, yeah, I think this is like the Vanek thing.
Yeah,
if you remember back to that.
Yep.
Where on July 1st, they lost Briere and they lost Drury, even though Drury promised them that he would come back to them with any offer. He did not do that. And now both of them were gone. And now Edmonton, you know, they're like, oh, let's go after Buffalo. And then they sign Vanek to an offer sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sabres are like, we've got it. We've got to match it. We have no choice. We've got to match it. And in hindsight, if you would have just given Briere and Drury what they wanted, forget about a negotiation, what they wanted, you would have had those together for around $12 million, and you would have had 5 first-round picks from the Edmonton Oilers to go with that. And that's back when the Oilers were picking, like, first and second overall. You know, so, you know, you could have had both those players plus all those picks, and, you know, it was just a colossal. But they had to. They couldn't lose Vanek along with Dahlin, or with Drury and Briere. And I think it's a very similar situation right here. They can't lose Alex Tuck. They just can't.
Paul Hamilton ahead of tonight's Sabres-Penguins game at KeyBank Center. Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
Sabres and Penguins. Boy, I mean, that Vanek moment, I remember. What did Darcy say? Something like, we're not a farm team. Go shop somewhere else, is what he said.
Did he say that?
Something like,
I like that.
He had a...
I don't remember that.
You know, when the offer sheets get signed, you're supposed to be mad at the other team.
Right.
But whatever. The Tuck thing, I think it's a good comparison, because if the number is 8 years, 12, should you do that? Doesn't matter. You probably have to.
I think
you have to.
I think there is an argument, too, that you should do it anyway. You know, like, you get 5 great years out of that deal, and I think that's a win. You got to eat 3 bad ones, like, whatever. That's what good teams do. So... I don't think it's that bad. He's a good enough player. He's a great skater. You're right to bring up the injuries. That would be my biggest concern, is does his body break down once he gets into his mid-30s? Because then that could be tough. But the way the cap is going up, $12 million now is going to sound like sticker shock, but it's finally going up. And it's next year, it's at 104 this year. It's going to 113 next year. There's something that could double in the next 10 years. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really afraid of the big salaries.
What you have to prepare yourself is what you've had to do in the NFL, which is accept the passage of time.
Yeah.
A guy will make, oh, wow, look at this exploding market. Like, actually, it's just the market for for quarterbacks, receivers, defensive ends.
Yeah,
Some positions will move a little bit, but the biggest contract in league history is actually a smaller percentage of the cap than a deal signed 2 years before.
That's the thing. I saw that Kaprizov's percentage of the cap that he signed for was the exact same as like what Dreisaitl's was. Like it's just in line with what we've had. It's just he signed in a different cap.
There's a bigger player pool of money.
Right.
So okay, you get 17% of the cap. Bang, there's your dollar amount. It's just more. 803-0550, our phone number. We'll get some calls in. We'll get to Joe Marino. And we'll get to what Stephon Diggs had to say about Bills fans.
Also, we have a quarterback change in the NFL that we'll bring you.
Oh, yeah?
There's a new quarterback going in officially.
I think I know who it is. All that coming up.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.